It's Friday, March 29th.
Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Details are emerging regarding Buffalo State University rescinding the appointment of a new school president. In December, the school announced that Dr. Chance Glenn would become the new president, effective in July. That appointment was rescinded 2 days ago. According to WIVB, a Texas newspaper reported that Glenn, who is an administrator at the University of Houston, Victoria, was accused of a conflict of interest, after securing a $270,000 research grant. Buffalo State University will continue to be led by interim president Dr. Bonita Durand through the end of the 2026 school year. The lengthy process of reconfiguring Buffalo's Skajakwata Expressway is taking another step. Governor Kathy Hochul announced Thursday an upcoming study on future enhancements for the Kensington Expressway will also examine options for the Skajakwata Expressway, including work advanced by the Greater Buffalo Niagara Regional Transportation Council. The group advanced several possibilities, notably a plan that would transform the expressway into a two-lane parkway that would connect Niagara Street with East Delavan Avenue. And the Buffalo and Erie County Naval and Military Park will host a ceremony today in recognition of National Vietnam War Veterans Day. The 10 a.m. event in the park's hangar building will feature veterans reading letters written by service members in Vietnam. A wreath will be placed at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Vietnam-era veterans will be given free admission to the park throughout the day. Federal funding will boost the efforts of the Buffalo Niagara Waterkeeper. Senators Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand announced a $5.6 million grant will be allotted from the Environmental Protection Agency's Great Lakes Environmental Justice Grant Program. The funding will be used to establish a regional grant program that will help identify the environmental restoration needs of local disadvantaged communities. A 35-year-old woman faces charges in connection with alleged narcotic sales at a North Collins grocery store. According to Erie County Sheriff John Garcia, the arrest of Ashley Bertino of Silver Creek followed a long-term investigation and surveillance operation. Charged with a number of crimes, including criminal sale of a controlled substance in the third degree, Bertino managed the store when the alleged sales were conducted. Deputies executed a search warrant at the store earlier this week when they found Bertino to be in possession of suspected methamphetamine and hydrocodone pills. And three Jamestown residents are accused of being part of a drug and sex trafficking conspiracy. The U.S. Attorney's Office says a federal grand jury indictment has issued multiple charges against 45-year-old Zaid Mendoza, 24-year-old Cora Waddington, and 41-year-old Kelvin Thomas. Authorities allege the accused were involved in an effort to sell fentanyl and methamphetamine in the Jamestown area. They're also accused of conspiring to force individuals to engage in commercial sex acts.
This live stream of WBFO is made possible by Canisius University. At Canisius University, Griffs know there is no progress without action. Moved by compassion and courage, they look at the world and say, "We can do better," and then do it. Canisius University, where leaders are made.
Well, Governor Kathy Hochul and state lawmakers concede that there's no chance they'll meet the state budget deadline, which is the day after Easter. But they say they intend to come back next month and try to reach an agreement on a spending plan. WBFO Albany correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
Senate Budget Bill, Senate Print 8302, an act to make appropriates for the legal requirements of the state debt service.
The legislature approved one budget bill to authorize the state to continue paying its debts. They then adjourned until next Tuesday, April 2nd, one day after the budget is due. They left the rest of the spending plan, including how to distribute school aid, pay for ever-increasing costs for health care, and an affordable housing program for later. On the Senate floor, Finance Committee Chair Liz Krueger, speaking on Thursday, says with Good Friday and Easter Sunday approaching, there was not enough time left to vote on everything.
We are working hard to reach agreement on billions of dollars of spending and revenue that, since we are planning to go home today with Good Friday tomorrow and Easter on Sunday, it is not realistic that we will get a complete budget done by April 1st.
Senate Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins told reporters that while discussions continue, there is still no agreement on the major issues.
We're in the middle of the middle, so yes.
Sticking points include Governor Hochul's proposal to alter school aid distribution and end what's known as Halt Harmless. That guarantees that all school districts do not receive less aid than they did the previous year. The Senate and Assembly oppose that plan. They want to instead have the state education department conduct a study to change the state's foundation aid formula at a future time. They say the sudden cuts would be too disruptive to schools. Lawmakers also want to restore Hochul's cuts to the Medicaid budget, including to home health care programs. Senator Stuart Cousins says lawmakers want to seek a federal waiver, similar to one granted to California. It could yield $4 billion over the next 3 years and avoid cuts. She says the affordability of health care is a national crisis, and the temporary waiver would help plug gaps until a long-term solution is reached.
It's not easy, it's not within reach, and that's why these creative solutions, you know, are what we use as part of the strategy to make sure that New Yorkers have access to quality, affordable care.
The governor and legislature have also not yet worked out an affordable housing plan. It could include a new tax credit for developers and stronger tenant protections. And they have yet to agree on a plan to crack down on retail theft. Hochul and lawmakers had raised the possibility of a conceptual agreement on the budget before breaking for the holiday, but the hope was fading, says Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie.
I can't predict a handshake deal. I guess I use the analogy that when the governor does a budget and resolutions that we're in the same galaxy, I think where the budget negotiations are now, I feel like we're on the same planet. I don't know if we're in the same country, in the same state yet, but we're at least on the same planet.
Lawmakers, before they adjourned for the long weekend, approved an extender bill sent by the governor. It will keep government running and pay state workers through Thursday, April 4th. Hochul, in a statement, says she believes a final budget agreement is within reach. Last year, the budget was more than 1 month late. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt. For the New York Public News Network.
Well, four of Ontario's biggest school boards have launched lawsuits against multiple social media platforms, including Snapchat, TikTok, and Meta. They allege that the platforms create products that negligently interfere with student learning and have caused widespread disruption. With more from Toronto, his correspondent Dan Karpinchuk.
The four are the Toronto Catholic and Toronto Public School Boards, as well as boards in Peel Region and Ottawa. It's an unprecedented case in Canada, but not so in the U.S., where hundreds of school boards have taken similar actions. The lawsuits in Canada are seeking $4.5 billion in damages against the social media giants. The boards allege that platforms are disrupting students' fundamental right to education. Rachel Chernos-Lynn is the chair of the Toronto District School Board.
We have a number of social media tech giants who have been knowingly creating products that are disrupting the way students learn, the way they think, the way they behave, knowingly creating products that are addictive, that are having huge negative, harmful impacts on our kids. And it is time that we speak up and we call them out for this.
The evidence of crisis is already out there, according to tech analyst Carmi Levy.
I mean, we've seen a growing body of evidence that suggests very clearly that these technologies are addictive, and this has a cost to society. And there are other organizations, institutions, governments, individuals, families that have to bear the cost.
Levy says he doesn't know where this lawsuit will go, but at the same time, it sends a huge message to the big tech companies. Rachel Chernos-Lynn says educators have been aware of the issue for a long time, but the concerns are growing.
We know that 45% of young people are on social media 5 hours or more a day. That is a significant amount of time that could be spent doing other things, but that's also having addictive properties that's changing how they learn, how they behave, how they think, and how they are emotionally. I would also tell you that a recent poll from Instagram showed that almost 22% of students aged 13 to 15 report being cyberbullied within the last 7 days. That's a staggering and shocking statistic.
The school boards also say the fallout of the compulsive use of social media among students is causing huge strains on the limited resources of the education system, including additional needs for mental health resources and personnel, higher IT costs, and additional administrative costs. But Ontario Premier Doug Ford disagrees with the lawsuits.
Let's focus on the core values of education. Let's focus on math and reading and writing. That's what we need to do, put all the resources into the kids. So let's focus on the kids, not about this other nonsense that they're looking to fight in court.
Duncan Embry is one of the litigation lawyers spearheading the case.
So, I mean, it's going to be a long and difficult fight for sure, but we believe, and I know our school board clients believe, this is a really necessary change and an issue that needs to be addressed.
Meanwhile, in responding to the lawsuits, TikTok says it has industry-leading safeguards such as parental controls, age restriction features, and more, and is continually evaluating practices to support the well-being of teenagers and will continue to keep the community safe. For WBFO News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
I did finally get out to see The Pajama Game at Lancaster Opera House, and they imported a guy to play Sid, an actor named Luke Halfarty, who was terrific. Sounded like John Raitt sometimes, and like Elvis Presley sometimes. It was nicely done, and Sidney Conrad as Babe. Some wonderful character work from Mary Rapal Benanti, who plays Mabel, the part that Rita Shaw originated on Broadway and recreated in the film. Almost everyone from the stage version was in the film, including Carol Haney, who had not played the opening night, because you may remember she broke her ankle. And you remember who went on for her?
I do not, but I think you've told the story.
Shirley MacLaine.
Oh, my God.
From the chorus, she danced Steam Heat and became a star. Rita Shaw, people knew her from TV's Ghost and Mrs. Muir, a lot of things, had, fascinatingly, lived in Buffalo for a while, where she had taught at the Studio Theater School, which is an interesting detail.
Well, speaking of Hoofers, the team that brought you Pajama Game also brought us Damn Yankees. Bob Fosse choreography. How'd that all work out?
Well, they absolutely recreated Steam Heat because Adler and Ross only did two shows together because one of them died at the age of 29. So it was deemed a great Broadway tragedy to have this team not continue. But it's interesting, Fosse's Steam Heat, which comes out of nowhere in The Pajama Game, but there's an identical number, Who's Got the Pain When They Do the Mambo, which pops out of nowhere similarly in Damn Yankees with this now unmistakable Bob Fosse choreography. I think the thing about it is that with young performers doing a show from 1954, not recognizing that it was viewed as feminist at the time, I think young performers see the situation where the male superintendent hits on the female employee and they cringe. And it's like, well, he has power over her. He's the boss. She has power over him. She's the chair of the grievance committee. And the overtly sexual nature of that first interaction where it gets into double entendres, I'd like to see your rule book. If you're a good boy, I'll show it to you, which was played quite sexlessly at Lancaster Opera House. Now, what do I do with that? Well, she gives as good as she gets in 1954. She has agency over her own life. Fascinating to see that done today. But a whole roster of musicals, new and newer, coming into Shays next season. They've announced the 2024 season.
Everybody's talking about it, and they're all asking me, what does Anthony think? So I said, I'll ask Anthony.
They do not.
They do too.
Well, it's a very good selection. It's been a long time since anyone's seen a professional production of The Wiz. Just in time for Christmas, The Lion King. Disney knows how to roll that out again. They wait for a new generation of children, so people are excited to see that. Hamilton back.
I thought Hamilton was their big moneymaker with 16 shows, but I think it's going to be Lion King this year. 24 shows. Wow.
Because of children. You can take children to see Lion King. You can take children to see The Wiz.
Again, Broadway shows that come out of movies, sort of, but I gather Some Like It Hot is not the exact play that the Tony Curtis Marilyn Monroe movie was. This has a twist.
A couple of twists. One, the introduction of African-American characters, but the Jack Lemmon character, rather than the buffoonery of Milton Berle-like drag, puts on women's clothing and realizes he's discovering something about himself. There's that additional twist. But the score is lively and wonderful, and the dancing is thrilling, and people will be very pleased with Some Like It Hot.
And how about the show And Juliet?
And Juliet. Well, it's Romeo and Juliet.
But forget Romeo, it's Anne Juliet.
Anne Hathaway, who is not the actress, but Shakespeare's wife, who comes in and tells him, you know, it's a much more interesting story if she doesn't die. And like Moulin Rouge, it is a jukebox musical that pulls pop songs in surprising ways. The best jukebox musicals of that type, it's the cleverness with which the songs are introduced.
But the one everyone wants to know about is Shucked.
It is about corn. A town that they're just in love with corn. Well, the corn crops start to die, which derails the plans for the central couple to get married. They cannot get married until this crisis is dealt with. And also the Neil Diamond musical, Beautiful Noise, which is, of course, jukebox musical. Yes. But what's not to love, you know, shouting back at the stage, so good, so good, so good, you know, Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, well, everyone in the audience also goes, bum, 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 on cue.
They all do. We can count on that. Back to the Future. If Aladdin can have a magic carpet, Back to the Future can have a flying DeLorean on tour. And so here it comes. So it's a very lively season. It doesn't have that difficult, depressing one that seemed to be becoming a tradition at Shays. Well, Dorothy does get homesick, but that's about as bleak as it gets. And it's so uplifting. Juliet does not die.
I love it.
For Theater Talk on WBFO.
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
I don't know about you, but I love hearing Theater Talk every Friday morning right here, part of Morning Edition on WBFO.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.